We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I actually haven't been able to talk to him recently. I know that he was getting after it in Arizona during the quarantine. I know moving forward he's going to be a part of things here on the South Side. We look forward to getting him back.
That's James McCann on his teammate Michael Kopech's decision to opt out of the abbreviated 2020 baseball season. And we're going to hear from Kopech in his own words in longer form from what he said on the Scores afternoon show, because he is a very thoughtful and interesting young man who's very open about what he has been dealing with personally. And I think it's really critical that we sort of define how we're talking about this. First of all, first and foremost, just I am really encouraged by how we now allow for athletes to be open about their emotions and anxieties, whether clinical anxiety or just small anxiousness, I guess would be a better way of that term of understanding, that they're not robots, that they're people. And it's an ongoing evolving process that we have as sports fans in the relationships that we have with these athletes. And it's yet another thing that the COVID-19 pandemic has accelerated, illuminated, and intensified, is how we respond to them being humans and how we feel. It's amazing how far we have come. In, 15 years ago, if somebody like Kevin Love would discussing what he's discussing, or anyone who's been open about this would say, we're not that far removed from that guy missed a game to be with his wife when she had a baby. Who does he think he is? I sign his paychecks because I pay for my tickets. And it really wasn't that long ago that we just held them to this standard of, because they're millionaire athletes, they got to do whatever we want because it's our team. And we're so far past that now. That's great. We're just generally nicer about that. It's one of the few things in society that's actually become smarter and nicer around the edges. And I think it's important to point those things out as things get meaner and dumber. And especially over the last mostly 4 years, of everything has gotten aggressively dumber and aggressively meaner, that there have been aspects of our lives that have gotten nicer and smarter. And that's one of them. It's one of them in this realm of sports talk, even of men 25 to 54, and where there is a lot of misplaced anger and misplaced aggression and tribalism. But in general, it's like, yeah, okay, we understand these things because we all deal with them too. And just because somebody is wearing a hat with a logo on it that we associate with something that either makes us feel good or makes us feel bad, that I think the understanding of that humanity is important. And with that in mind, it is possible that Michael Kopech just doesn't want to play this year because he doesn't want to get sick and he doesn't want to endanger people in his family and he doesn't want to be a viral vector. It's possible that it's just that. But then you read what Don Cooper told the Sun-Times. And I feel a little gross and a little weird, trying, because we don't know and the team won't say, they can't say, because it's... I don't want to speculate too much. I don't. I just have what actually has been reported and what teammates have said, and I want to keep it at that. But all that Don Cooper said was, I don't know what's going on with Michael. I know he deals with some anxiety and depression, and my thought is I sure hope he's okay. I hope he gets to where he needs to be, where he's feeling good and wants to come back, because we will welcome him back with open arms. That's his pitching coach. I don't know how specifically informed that is, but that's what he said. A teammate of his, Aaron Bummer, he was on Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and Zach Zaidman over the weekend, and this was his reaction to Kopech's decision.
I think that we get so ingrained in our minds that, you know, athletes are athletes, and, you know, the personal lives of athletes is, you know, it's the game first. And, you know, in a time like this, I mean, we're in a global pandemic, guys, and, you know, there's so much more going on in people's lives. And, you know, just to kind of even speculate on what's happening in either my life, your life, Michael's life, you know, I think that's an unfair thing to do. So, you know, we support Michael and we support all the guys that are opting out. That's a personal choice and they have that right. You know, and we wish them all the best. We wish Michael the best, and we hope that, you know, whenever he does come back, you know, he's ready to go. But for right now, Michael did what's right, what's best for Michael. And, you know, I support him fully and 100% in that way.
Good for him. And those are thoughts that were echoed by Gio Gonzalez, the White Sox starting pitcher, also voicing support for Kopech's decision.
We got some young guys that are filling the spots. I mean, obviously, you know, Mike is huge for this organization. He's huge for the clubhouse. Obviously, it's his decision, and we respect him 100%. I wish I would have had an opportunity to play with him a little bit more. But, you know, I get it. It's times like this right now. It's very hard to, you know, judge anybody on their decisions. You know, it's well 100 respected for him and his family, and, you know, just but we have to focus on people that are here. And I think that after watching Dunning pitch, you know, some of the guys coming in, you know, showing their stuff, I mean, it's pretty exciting to see that, you know, there's guys that are going to try to step up and do their part and make it a deal to be recognized in this organization and try to earn their spot here.
Michael Kopech joined Dan McNeil and Danny Parkins way back when the world was a very different place on January 23rd. And they asked him about whether he feels an improvement in how he deals with the ups and downs of baseball now that he has shared his struggles with anxiety and depression.
I definitely do. And, you know, I think it had to do with me allowing myself to open up about it. It was something that I didn't talk about for a long time, and it kind of crippled me because I was so introverted. And not that I'm not introverted anymore, but I'm a lot more comfortable with who I am, and who I am isn't necessarily the center of attention person. You know, I'm not looking for the spotlight. I'm just looking to get my stuff done and get out. And I think I lied to myself about wanting that spotlight for a lot of my career, and, you know, kind of recognizing it for what it is now. And it is my career and it is what I'm passionate about, but it's not just an excuse to get famous. You know, like, that side of the game is no longer important to me at all. But what it has done is it's allowed me to really focus on being the best version of myself, and that as a competitive athlete and just as a person. And so, to answer your question, yeah, I do feel maybe not necessarily healed. I'd be lying to you if I said I didn't get anxiety anymore, but I'm a lot more comfortable in my own skin.
I'm pumping my fist here to hear you say that, because mental illness, and I've got it, long family history of it. I check a lot of boxes, Michael. You're never healed. It's a daily process with medication, talk therapy, and having a support group, isn't it?
Right, absolutely. And it's something that has to be a daily practice, you know. And for me, it's been a routine, you know, a self-care routine, if you will. But it's something that I've had to create for myself to kind of cope with this. And that may sound like overwhelming to some people. Oh, you have to do that just to live a normal life. But you know what? It is just part of me. And for a lot of people, part of their routine in their life would be different to me. But kind of learning to deal with these things and finding things that work for me, it's just really been comforting. And having that support group is, you know, usually family, and having a wife now that is family. And so I have people around me that are close to me, that love me and care about me, and it makes this stuff a lot easier. And, you know, it's I think the reason I like talking about it so much is there's people out there that probably wonder if anyone else goes through this, because I was that person for a long time. And, you know, opening up about it has really allowed me to meet people that have gone through this and have gone through much worse. So it makes my perspective, you know, all the less important, but still that much more valuable.
Michael, what were the watershed moments that led you to seeking treatment? What was the bottom like?
The bottom was just being lost, in a sense. I can't really pinpoint to one thing. You know, I've vaguely talked about having a point of suicidal thoughts, and at that stage in my life, you know, it's not something I'm proud to talk about, but it's something that's very real. And at that stage in my life, I didn't know what I wanted, who I was, what I thought was a normal life, so to speak. And I think by being around people that truly love me and care about me, and not necessarily Michael Kopech, the baseball player, which I, even on my intro there, I've defined myself as a baseball player, but I think now it's more so about me, you know, being a baseball player second. You know, I have a real life and a real support group and a real loving family, and that's really what defines me. And then anything after that is just gravy on top, you know.
When you talk about your routine for self-help, what have you found that works for you?
Yeah, so it's probably different than most people would expect. I've recently turned to God, but also along with that, my views of God have been very open. You know, I grew up in the church, but I grew up without having an idea of what church was. And so for me to kind of put my heart and soul, so to speak, into something that I really thought would open me up, has been groundbreaking for me. And along with that, I've continued meditating, and meditation has been something that's really kind of helped me, you know, quiet the storm, so to speak. And on top of that, I've created a routine with just taking care of my body. And taking care of my body, I've noticed, has been a lot easier to navigate my mind. The two things kind of go hand in hand in my eyes, and the idea of cutting any of that out, to me, it just makes it that much more harder for me to kind of cope with my own problems. So just being well-balanced in every sense of the word, and if that's my, you know, spiritual beliefs, if that's my health, if that's mental health, you know, I just have to have a good care routine for self that kind of takes priority over what's going on later, what's going on yesterday. Any of that anxiety is kind of just living through the current moment and taking advantage of what I'm doing right now.
Did you have a relationship, Michael, with alcohol and drugs?
You know, I never had a serious relationship with alcohol and drugs, but I'd be lying to you if I said that through my darkest depressions, I didn't turn to alcohol and probably abuse it more than I should have.
Yeah, and it's the type of thing I was wondering as we're talking to Michael Kopech ahead of SoxFest this weekend. Are you seeing the benefits of this mental clarity, for lack of a better term for it? Are you seeing the benefits of it with your baseball?
Yeah, I mean, I think it all kind of pays off, you know. And not that the end goal is to be a better baseball player from taking care of my mind, but it does affect that, you know. How clear you are in everyday life is going to show up in your day of work too, you know. And for me to kind of just focus on that clarity, and you strive for that clarity, when I get on the mound, you know, it just makes it all that much easier, because that's something I've done my whole life. You know, that's the one place that I truly never really felt anxious, and kind of losing that anxiety and being able to go out there and perform when I'm the calmest I've ever been, I think it can be nothing but beneficial.
So how much are you looking forward to this season? I know for the team, the sky's the limit, but what about for you personally to get back out there after the rehab?
Yeah, I think really my goal is to just be a part of what's happening right now. We have so much great additions that have just happened. And for me, you know, I know I'm going to have to go into spring and be competitive. I know that my job isn't concrete, and I know that I'm going to be a guy that, you know, can't take advantage of, you know, the privilege that I have had in the past, and that's being a priority amongst our starting staff. And I may not necessarily be a priority anymore, but I'm definitely going to fight my way into a position. There's things that I have to do, and there's things that I have to reprove after a surgery. And that's not me asking for pity. That's me just seeing it how it is and looking forward to taking advantage of that competitive side of me.
How close do you think you are to trusting yourself completely physically?
I'm pretty close. You know, I fortunately for me, I was able to go out there last year at the end of the year and have a little bit of, you know, competitive nature with when I was in Instructs, and I got to face some guys there. I got to throw a few innings there, and I think that really got me comfortable again. So I think once I'm throwing bullpens and back in spring, I'll be full go and I'll be ready to compete.
You talk about, you know, not being as much of a priority. Like, what makes you feel that way? Because when I mean, I see you on the top of prospect lists and people know about your talent and they got just a glimpse of you. Like, what makes you feel like you're maybe not as big of a piece of this puzzle?
Maybe I shouldn't have worded it that way. I don't want
to. I'm not trying to make a headline out of what you're saying. I'm interested.
No, I know. I understand. And I'm not saying I don't feel important. You know, I just understand that right now there are guys that are healthy and there's guys that have earned their keep. And, you know, like we have just signed Keuchel, and Giolito's coming off a great year, and Lopez has had his experience there and he's had success there. And, you know, Cease is healthy and he's going to come back and be better than ever. And I know that, you know, I haven't reproved myself is what I'm saying.
Sure.
And I know that I need to reprove myself. Maybe it's not the team looking at me like I'm not a priority. I don't feel that way. I feel like I need to reprioritize myself by proving myself again.
That is Michael Kopech. Fascinating stuff from back in January with McNeil and Parkins. Now, we just received some new information regarding his decision to opt out, as reported by James Fegan in The Athletic, that can further inform this discussion. We'll bring you that next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Michael Kopech is not currently here. He has been excused with permission from the club to not report today so that he can attend to a personal matter. At this time, I do not have a timeline or a time frame for his return. And given the personal nature of the matter he's attending to, I won't be providing updates until we know the actual plan for Michael going forward. Given the time we're living through together, I will share the question that's probably, or I try to answer the question that's probably now at the top of everybody's mind, and just share the fact that currently Michael is healthy.
White Sox general manager Rick Hahn talking about Michael Kopech and his decision to opt out of the 2020 season. I mentioned we got a little bit of news on that regard. We're going to get to that in just a second, because there's also news from Wrigley Field. According to Mark Gonzalez of the Tribune, David Ross and five other Cubs Tier 1 individuals are awaiting their completed Saturday test results and will not attend this morning's workout. These six individuals anticipate further clarity later today. Ross said, "We've decided to do the prudent thing, so myself and the five others will not attend this morning's workout out of an abundance of caution. We think it makes sense for the six of us to wait for clarity. Situations like this have not been a worrisome indicator of a positive test result to date." They're not the only team. I believe I read the Houston Astros were experiencing something similar, and especially in an area as hard hit as Houston, where emergency rooms are full, that we're starting to wonder about some of the optics of the test results when it's most important that actual civilians are getting tested, getting their results, and the contact tracers and the doctors and scientists can have that information, let alone sports teams deciding to come back, to bring back sports and getting all their tests for all their people, and perhaps jump in the line ahead of some people who need the test more acutely. Different conversation for a different time,
but it's as we know, the ability to test is once again becoming strained. The wait times for tests, and especially in these hard hit areas, have gone up significantly. And it just it seems weird to think that we're prioritizing the health of these athletes and everybody involved with these business efforts ahead of some of the other people on the ground. So James Feegan of The Athletic reports today the following. He says, in February of 2021, the White Sox expect to welcome right-hander Michael Kopech back into the fold and into their clubhouse. Maybe by that point or sooner, he will have addressed the media and given one of his typically very forthright accountings of an agonizing decision to not play in 2020. Until then, White Sox leadership will trust in the communication they have had with him over the past 2 weeks. That trust centers around a meeting where sources close to Kopech praised the team's conscientious handling of the club's highest-ranked pitching prospect, making the difficult decision to bench himself while his teammates try to clinch a playoff berth amid a global COVID-19 pandemic. At this point, 11 other players across the league have elected not to play the 2020 season based on pandemic-related concerns in addition to Kopech. Now, this is James Feegan. According to multiple sources, the White Sox got a full presentation of Kopech's concerns about playing in 2020 during a meeting in Chicago that included Chairman Jerry Reinsdorf, General Manager Rick Hahn, and Assistant GM Jeremy Haber. On the same day of that meeting, roughly 2 weeks ago, two sources indicate Kopech spoke over the phone with Manager Rick Renteria for an hour. Kopech's camp has been in regular contact with the Sox front office since. Those parties involved have an understanding of the concerns that Kopech and his representatives presented, but will strive to respect his privacy until he personally decides to reveal his motivations. Now, here's where we learn some things, specifically not just the existence of the meeting and these conversations. Sources close to Kopech indicate he was driven by a litany of concerns, not limited to a short ramp up to action, an uncertain role, uncertainty over the fate of the 2020 season, caution in determining how and when to best return from Tommy John surgery, and despite not being medically deemed high risk himself, concerned over how playing amid the pandemic could threaten the health of those close to him. In the subsequent days, since the White Sox announced Friday afternoon that Kopech will not play, members of the White Sox organization not privy to those meetings have largely struck a similar tone. They've not had contact with him, or at least not to a degree to speak to his decision, but respect it in light of their relationship with him as a teammate and the extraordinary circumstances under which it was made. And we played that sound for you in the last segment from Gio Gonzalez, the stuff from Don Cooper. But this is why, as I mentioned before, this is exactly why we need to approach such stories with care, because several things can be true. That Michael Kopech can be a complicated and forthright person who has been very clear, open, and honest about his difficulties with anxiety and depression, and being very conscious of his mental health. And that can also be completely uninvolved with his decision to sit out this year. And we have to stay aware of those things. Because it's easy to say, oh yeah, Michael Kopech, this guy who's shared all these difficulties, that it's causal here. And it appears, based on this reporting, it is not necessarily causal. It appears it's not, based on this information. That, again, to repeat the reasons that were given here, sources close to Kopech indicate he was driven by a litany of concerns, not limited to a short ramp up to action, an uncertain role, uncertainty over the fate of the 2020 season, caution in determining how and when to best return to action from surgery, and despite not being medically deemed high risk, concern over how playing amid the pandemic could threaten the health of those close to him. There's nothing in there about any specific mental health issues. However, when we look at it in full context, about what he has dealt with and about, I mean, all of those things taken in full can constitute some degree. You could understand why someone prone to anxiety would be making a decision based on one's own mental health because of all of these specific reasons. If we look at the gestalt of this, if we look at the macro as much as the micro, and it can get uncomfortable to do distant armchair sports radio psychoanalysis of people, because it doesn't seem right. I mean, obviously this is a person who matters a lot to the White Sox. This is a public figure, as athletes are, but there are not only HIPAA laws that prevent the teams from saying too much about what's going on, but there's just generally the privacy aspect of it, of what feels right and what feels wrong. Because, you know, part of it too is, when I look at the text line, when we replayed that chunk of that January interview, and I look at the number of texters who say thank you, the number of people on Twitter who say thank you, it's important to talk about these things. It's just, there is value in talking about these things, specifically for the sports radio listenership demographic who might otherwise feel that they've got to just tough things out or pretend something is not right. It's good to do. And because of my particular involvement with some causes, and look, frankly, what we've gone through, you know, with my wife, who has been very open and about her similar struggles as being diagnosed bipolar 2 some years ago, and what she has then done for her industry in the wedding planning industry, where she has spoken nationally at industry conferences about destigmatizing mental illness, anxiety, and depression in her industry. It's been really important to her to tell her story and to tell everybody it's okay, and to seek help and to help create, to do the work to create support systems in her industry. And it's why I've been honored for the last couple years, where she and I both have been involved with a Chicago-based charity called Rebecca's Dream, which was founded in honor of journalist Becky Cutler. And what they do similarly for young women, for high school kids, for college students, and everywhere, what the Rebecca's Dream Foundation has done to destigmatize, to raise awareness, to help people understand, to help people appreciate the reality of anxiety, depression, and mental illness, the importance of mental health, and create the building blocks, create the support networks, and get people in touch with doctors, and get people in touch with people who say it's okay and who can understand. And these things are real, and they don't care that you're a baseball player that can throw 100 miles an hour. Your serotonin levels don't care. It doesn't matter. So I also feel that while it can be uncomfortable and say, you know, this feels invasive and it feels wrong to do, there's also a responsibility, I think, to, when we have the opportunity to amplify some of these concerns and talk about some of these things, that ultimately is a good thing. It ultimately helps to do such things. This is Jim in Michigan City. He's on The Score. Hello, Jim.
Hello.
Yes, you're on The Score.
Dan, I totally understand the depression and the anxiety that I battle with myself, and bringing it up and making people aware of it, I think is 100% a great thing. And obviously, Michael's done a great thing of talking about that in the past. But, I mean, Matt Spiegel had mentioned that he had three sources on Saturday, and I'm not saying Michael Kopech has to suck it up or tough it up or whatever, but this sounds to be a baseball-related decision. It doesn't seem to be COVID-related or depression-related. He's afraid of the way they're going to use him, and he's coming back off of an arm injury. So this information didn't just come out. Matt Spiegel said there were three sources and quoted James Spiegel on Saturday with this information.
Okay. Your point being?
So, I mean, you're making this about his depression, and that
I'm very specifically and painstakingly not doing that.
You haven't said one thing that he's looking out for his arm health.
I just read the paragraphs directly from what
Jim. That information has been out since Saturday. You didn't bring it up until you said it's breaking news. That information has been out. Spiegel talked about it for 2 hours on Saturday.
I'm talking about it now
as
part of
this
discussion.
He's making a Michael Kopech decision. It's not because he's having a depression battle.
Wait a second. So what is your point? What are you saying about him?
He's looking out for himself and his arm health.
And what's wrong? Why is that? What's wrong with that?
He has a choice to do that, but If I'm in
the, wait,
if I'm
wait
in
a second. If he has the choice,
issue, I totally understand.
Wait a second. So you're saying it's not okay?
Oh, I he can do whatever he wants. It doesn't bother
but,
me.
No. You're not. No, I'm just saying
if
that you're
depression or COVID. If it's depression or COVID, understandably, 100% take the season off. If it's his arm health that he's worried, or his, if I'm a teammate, I'm not happy with that.
And
I'm
here
not
you
happy
go.
That
see,
I'm a teammate.
It took you a while to admit it. You're calling him a bad teammate.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think
if
that's
COVID or depression. He's not a bad teammate. If he's worried about his arm health and about his role on the team, then yes, he's a bad teammate.
It's obviously
and you won't
all.
Say that.
It's obviously.
You won't say that.
I won't say that because I think it's an awful thing for you to think. That's why. And I wouldn't. And I wouldn't think it because I don't think it.
So if someone didn't have a concern with depression or COVID, what if it was Carlos Rodon? So just every pitcher that has a concern about arm health shouldn't play?
Anybody who wants to opt out this year cannot.
Because
opt out.
Of COVID or depression would be understandable. Not well, because of a worry about your own arm
if,
and you're
taking
if you
listen
your
to what he said, he
over the
he,
team.
He mentioned COVID. That was specifically mentioned.
But like I said, people who have actually reported on this have said
listen,
that it's more about
let me arm. Let me read the
you haven't reported.
I'm reading you the reporting. This is from The Athletic. He mentioned that he has concern over how playing amid the pandemic could threaten the health of those close to him. What more do you need? I would thank you for the call, but I'm not thankful for it. When we come back, we'll do the midday midway. We have several things we have to get to, including walking sharks, monkeys that may or may not be doing slave labor on the behalf of a major industry, and all hell is breaking loose at Dollywood. That's all coming your way next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, midway.
The midday midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel.
The midday midway with Dan Bernstein on The Score.
The midday midway is brought to you by Grand Appliance and TV. Exclusively at Grand Appliance, get Chicagoland's lowest appliance prices, plus up to $500 back on qualifying purchases from top brands like Bosch, GE, KitchenAid, LG, Samsung, and more. Savings end August 12th. Safely shop online or in store today at Grand Appliance, trusted since 1930. A very busy start to the show with a lot going on, including some major sports news that I didn't think we'd ever have. And we did. And that is that the Washington football team has announced that they're going to get a new name, that they have to fight with some copyright squatters to actually get that name that has been grabbed and copyrighted in a classic way of doing Washington football business. But it's really happening. It is actually happening. They are actually going to change the name that Dan Snyder, who said it's never going to change, and you can put that in all caps, has been humbled by what was going to be an exodus of millions and millions of dollars and potentially no avenue to a much-needed new stadium. Cindy Boren of the Washington Post joined us to talk about that. And then we spoke with Jason Benetti, the always thoughtful White Sox broadcaster. And we discussed the situation currently with Michael Kopech and the latest reports as to why he has made the decision to sit out, and all of the complications involved in everything that informs his thinking, everything that he deals with also. We heard him from January talking about how he handles the mental health aspects of what he does and how it informs every bit of it. This is from the Bangkok Post. Thailand, the world's top producer of coconut milk, has said it will enable retailers and consumers to trace coconuts back to their source. We're doing contact tracing for coconuts now, to show whether monkeys have been used for harvesting. And I want to thank Joe Bartosz of our sister station WBBM 105.9 FM and 780 AM for tipping me off to this last week. The $400 million industry, which relies on monkeys at some farms, is facing possible boycotts in the U.S., Europe, and Australia after People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, allege that monkeys are being abused and treated like coconut-picking machines for Thai growers and producers. Officials from the country's commerce industry, animal welfare agency, and representatives from the industry met in Bangkok and have agreed to create measures that ensure the traceability of Thai coconut products, according to a statement. See, this does not affect me. I can't stand coconut. The only time I can maybe tolerate it is in a really good spicy Thai curry. But like coconut water and, you know, Almond Joy or anything like that, yuck. Packages will be marked with a code that can be used to track the product back to their source, which will show whether they came from monkey-free farms. The PETA report caused waves across the world, with several British supermarkets saying it will stop selling some Thai coconut products. And a major Thai producer says it's receiving inquiries from U.S. and Australian retailers. They allege that an undercover investigation at 8 farms and several monkey training schools, it gets better, revealed shocking abuse where monkeys are chained, confined to cramped cages, and forced to climb trees and pick coconuts. They have called this the enslavement of monkeys. And this goes on and on. And they show the monkey schools and everything. And they talked to Somaji Saikau of First Monkey School, who said, "We have to understand that climbing tall trees for humans is a very dangerous job that could end in injury or death. It would be great if we could find an alternative way to collect coconuts. Many of us will be happy to change." They're saying, okay, yeah, well, buy some cherry pickers or use, you know, ladders. There's a concept of, you know, the old, we used to go pick apples and used to have to climb the trees before they bred the apple trees. You're just like an apple bush now. You walk over and pick the apple. You used to have the big trapezoidal ladders as part of the fun. You drop the apple down into the bushel, and now you don't do that anymore. But you could, you know, you could use a ladder as part of this. But I hadn't really thought about this. Are there any other products where we unfairly take advantage of animal labor? Obviously, there are fields that are plowed by oxen. Aren't there still? There are some places, but that's just sort of what those animals do, I guess. Is that wrong? Should we not be yoking oxen to plow fields?
I was going to say bees.
That's the Eddie Izzard bit. Like, they're making all this stuff. The one thing that I've been able to understand about bees, though, is they make way too much for their own consumption. Like, I think they have enough to support their hive and protect the queen and feed their young. It's my understanding they kind of take the excess. Like, thank you for that. Thank you. We'll be taking all that now. I guess.
That's how we justify it. That's how
right?
Has anyone asked the bees how they feel, Dan?
A spokesman for the bees declined comment. Said, protocol 756, protect queen. That's always the statement for the spokesperson.
Yes, we must protect. We right. must. What is it, Naked Gun? I must kill the queen.
The queen. It's Reggie.
I must protect the queen.
it so happens the spokesman also talks like Reggie Jackson and is wearing an Angels uniform.
And that's an afro.
A new species of walking sharks has been discovered. Land shark. Candy Graham.
I didn't order a candygram.
Land shark. They're not walking on land. They're walking in the ocean. But what's cool is how they've evolved. This is a story involving Darwinism that isn't some story about how dumb somebody was and blew their head off, you know, shooting a fireworks off. But apparently, we knew that there were these, but it's how they're adapting that's apparently a story. There are these tiny little epaulet sharks that look, I think they're a leopard shark relative, and they can walk in the ocean on the bottom rather than swim, and it helps them on the tips of their fins position themselves to get into some of these nooks and crannies and find what they eat, the little snails and small fish and shellfish, etc. And what they didn't know was how rapidly and recently they developed the ability. Because the walking sharks are in roughly the same area in the waters off northern Australia.
And they're he said instead of swimming around, they use their pectoral and pelvic fins, and that way they can poke their heads under coral and rocks as they look for stuff to eat. And they explain that the sharks that have been observed walking are in isolated areas, and they don't travel far. It's rapid development of walking techniques to individuals or small groups moving to a new area, and once they adapt the technique, future generations learn it from birth. And they say speciation happens when individuals of a given species get separated from their main population, sometimes by walking or swimming or being carried away in a current to an isolated place. This is really the ultimate lesson that anybody, when you study Darwin in, you know, sixth grade or junior high or high school, like whatever level, this is the Galapagos finches, which is not a minor league baseball team. But what happened was the very same bird was isolated on different islands. And over time, they developed differently shaped beaks based on what they had to eat. Which kind of seeds, which kind of nuts, wherever they were going, the very same species ended up developing subspecies characteristics just because the ones that were eating enough to survive happened to have a beak that was better shaped to adapt to what was there on that island for them to eat. And Darwin discovered this, and this is right in front of us, another example of that, which is pretty cool. I don't know what the hell is going on at Dollywood. And on the list of places where I'd ever like to go, Dollywood probably not high on the list. And it's in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. And it's Dolly Parton's amusement park, right? So it's like a Branson thing on steroids and silicone, right? But it just
yes. Right? It's supposed to be really good. I've not been yet, but everyone I know who's been there says it's awesome. Like, it's beautiful and really nice. It's not dumpy. It's really nice and well maintained and updated often.
All right, well, but be careful because things are falling on you there. Three visitors have been hit by what they call a falling decoration at the Wilderness Pass area, and they've been sent to a hospital. Officials with Dollywood, also speak like the spokesman for the bees, say three people were hit by a decoration on Saturday in the Wilderness Pass area by the Mystery Mine. What's the mystery? I don't know. Crap falls on your head and you go to the hospital. They say it was not a ride-related incident. They were evaluated by first responders and paramedics, then sent to the hospital in an ambulance in a stable condition. I didn't say which stable condition.
That's a weird way to put it.
In a stable condition. Stable enough, kind of. The official said the park is cooperating with an investigation by the Pigeon Forge Police Department about the incident. They said the Mystery Mine ride is closed. So they said it's not ride-related. Most of Dollywood is still open. And all I can think of is the scene in Dodgeball where Patches O'Houlihan meets his untimely end when the sign that says Luck of the Irish falls on him.
Yes. Well, how do they not know what? It's so vague. A decoration fell on them. What decoration is it? You clearly have a faulty decoration.
Right. Something happened, and they're using odd euphemisms to not tell us what's happening. But that's not all that's going on at Dollywood. Meanwhile, over in Bologna, a Dollywood master craftsman was injured on Sunday afternoon while working on a project in the park's mountain-blown glass shop. Blown glass shop. Dollywood said he was stabilized at the scene, was transported to the hospital. No guests were in danger or injured in the incident. Park officials said their thoughts and prayers are with him and his wife in this difficult time. The incident is under investigation, and the park is in the process of notifying the Tennessee Operational Health and Safety Administration as required. The glass blowing shop is closed, pending the outcome of the investigation. That is the blown glass shop. Not the blown saves shop. That's different. And I'll never forget being in New Orleans. And it was after the Super Bowl. It was the Packers-Patriots Super Bowl 97. I was in New Orleans too long. 11 straight days, which is too long to be in New Orleans. They should have kicked me out. And it was in between Super Bowl and Mardi Gras. I took like a busman's holiday and flew my then girlfriend, now wife, down there to hang out for a while because we just could. It took some vacation, and I was able to keep the discounted hotel rate, and everything was a win-win. But it was too long. It was enough already. And at one point, I forgot which street it is. I turn the corner, and there's a huge sign for glass blowing. But because of the angle of where I was standing and just the, where the building was and what was in front of it, the G and the L in glass were obscured. Like, perfectly obscured. So yeah. I turned the corner.
Careful. You know what? Don't read right. the sign, Dan. Right.
That's a lovely name.
I turn the corner. I look up. I'm like, whoa! What is it? And how much? And first explain to me what it is, and then, I mean, I know they like to have their fun in New Orleans, but what is this thing of which you speak? So I somewhere I have a picture of it, because it was just too perfect, because it so happened that it was like there was a sign there, and right when you have to be walking, if you were driving, it wouldn't have happened because of the angle of the sidewalk. But I turned and I just said, "Hey, honey, look at that. Let's go get a little bit of that, huh? What do you say?"
See, this is way better than a massage,
right? And that is the Midday Midway. We have basketball players doing basketball things in the basketball bubble. They're catching big fish, and they're enjoying themselves, but they're also complaining about it, and Lakers are dropping like flies. Everything that is going on with the NBA bubble and the Knicks and the Bulls perhaps vying for the viable coaching candidates at this point. Brian Geltzeiler, Hoops Critic, joins us next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.